And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. Right, the water's been out in Letchermack Award since yesterday evening, but we've received no update from Ishka Aaron, says a listener. 2 weeks ago, our water was dirty and black. We put on a wash and the clothes were ruined. What is going on? Good question. Right, another caller says, I completely agree with the councillor's point. The Irish flag should never be used as a tool of intimidation. It represents peace, unity and pride in our shared culture. Allowing the far right to hijack it for their own agenda only damages what it truly stands for. Wanting to protect the flag from misuse is not anti-Irish. It's the opposite, in fact. It's about respecting and preserving its real meaning. That comes in from Myra in Letterkenny. And I do appreciate the alternative views there, Myra. I really do. Right. This is a member of the party who insists we shouldn't cut aid to third world nations. Should they need the money to buy Russian weapons, they say. Another caller says, buses is a bit of an issue. One of mine was getting the bus from Manor to Little Angels last year, and I basically didn't go into the office for the entire school year and had to adjust my start time because my partner would drive the older kids into school while still waiting on a bus, which doesn't make sense, does it? Another comment here. I'm always annoyed when flags have words written on them. They should be left exactly as they are. Lots of you texting in relation to that. Keep them coming into us on 08660 29000. 08660 25000. I was typing 9, Caroline, because I'm a multitasker, you see. Or give us a call on 07491 25000. We're all proud of our national flag, says a listener. Let's not use it to express hate. That, to me, would be a disgrace. I've been flying the tricolour for years, and it's because I'm in Ireland and it's the national flag. I also fly the Donegal flag. Are we to abandon our heritage now? What nonsense, they say. We are not far right. We're working class, tired of this government system forced on us, says a listener. I understand where you're coming from, but you're not targeting the government in doing that, actually. What some would argue is you're targeting different groups. Maybe that's the aim as well. I don't know, but it's not really targeting government at all. If the truth be told, they don't care. Right, we're joined on the programme now by Dermot Pepper, who's a journalist with journal.ie. Dermot, thank you very much for your time. It's greatly appreciated.
No, thanks for having me.
Right, so talk to us about this ongoing operation in Donabate. What's the background to this story?
So I suppose the background is that Garda spokesperson today has said that concerns for a missing boy were raised by Tusla when Tusla reported this to Gardaí last Friday, the 29th of August. And it's understood that Tusla were made aware of this when the Department of Social Protection raised concerns about an application for social welfare. It's understood an application was made for child benefit in the name of the child, but when this was examined by the department, they discovered there's no record of the child having ever gone to school. So Gardaí today said that the boy who went missing a number of years ago is presumed dead, and that an area of Donabate will be subject to a search in the coming days.
Now, they have spoken to people in relation to this, and they seemingly are keeping they're keeping their minds open in the investigation as to what might have happened to this child.
Yeah, so it's been a number of years, at least 3 years, since there's been any confirmed sighting of the child who went missing when he was around 3.5. It's understood he'd be around 7 now. It's understood that Gardaí have spoken to the parents of the child, one of whom is abroad and one of whom is in Ireland. But despite inquiries and information they've received so far, Gardaí have been unable to locate the boy, to identify any information on his current whereabouts or any evidence that he's currently alive. And as a result of all of that, Gardaí have said that the missing boy is presumed dead. It's also understood that Gardaí haven't ruled out any possibility ranging from a homicide or to death by natural causes. But in any case, concealing a person's death or the secret burial of human remains are criminal offences. And yesterday, investigating, Cardaí took control of an area of open ground in Donabate in Dublin, which is now going to be the subject of a search in the coming days. And no arrests have been made, but Cardaí said investigations are ongoing. And they've appealed, I suppose, for time and space to carry out the operation, which they note is a very sensitive operation.
Yeah, and the appeal is for space, not for witnesses or anyone with any information, which is what people might not see as the norm.
Yeah, indeed. So the investigation room, it's going to be based, there's an incident room established at Swords Garda Station. Obviously, it's been over 3 years since there's been a confirmed sighting of the boy. So Cardaí are appealing to anyone who just has any type of information in connection with this to make contact. And just some background, Tusla had said yesterday in a statement that their referral to the Cardaí was in relation to concerns about the well-being and safety of the child, and they have committed to continuing to work with the Cardaí and sharing any relevant information they have had. And Minister for Children Norma Foley has also said she's been briefed on the investigation, will be kept up to date, and has also appealed to anyone who may have any information whatsoever to cooperate with Cardaí.
Yep. Okay. Listen, thank you very much for that. I do appreciate it. Thank you, Dermot. That's Dermot Pepper, who is a journalist with journal.ie. There are lots of questions, really, that's not appropriate to put to Dermot. But I mean, you know, at some point, we're going to have to start having the conversation about how a child, two children that we know of now, can disappear off the face of the earth. And sometimes it almost feels like happenstance that we discover that they're missing. What's going on in terms of our duty of care to children in this country, whereby a child can disappear for such a long period of time? And it almost feels like by chance that we discover what's going on. Your Labour speaker earlier is a total disgrace. Our leaders of 1916 and more will be turning in their grave. He's actually made me want to fly our flag proudly in a small Boulder village in Donegal. Resign of our national flag offends you. That comes in from Gary. And Gary, you know, the thing is, what I have observed in other countries is the more that this is resisted, the more people say, hold on a second, this is our flag. And they begin to sort of fly in the flag, not necessarily for the reasons the other flags are being flown, but because it feels like you're being told what you can do with your own flag. It's a funny situation, and not funny, haha, but you know what I mean. Hi, Greg. We need to follow the shining light of the left liberal Denmark as they've solved the immigration crisis, says a listener. Tell that man that the economic migrants are here and it's not nonsense. Tell him to take a walk in Letterkenny, and I guarantee you he'll see at least 10 people who aren't from here before he gets halfway down the town. It's like a different nation now. But obviously, depending on the time of the day in the area, that's a given. The thing is flying the flag, say some people see it's intimidating, is that a proportionate response to the economic migrants, as you describe them, that might also make people who are Irish but may have darker skin, or who are kids of Irish, are they feeling uncomfortable or targeted, a price worth paying in your mind, certainly not mine, but in your mind, to highlight the fact that you see more foreigners walking down a street, if that makes sense, because, you know, every action has a reaction. Good morning, Greg. That guy Dara should go and take a good look at himself. I'll fly my flag of my country when I see, when I like. No one will tell me not. I'm not far right. And other people do have a right to fly the national flag. Funny enough, though, you do and you don't. Like, you don't have the right to fly the national flag on the telegraph pole outside your house, you know, on the main street, for an example. You must seek permission for that, apparently, according to the rule of the law. So you have the right to fly your national flag, I would imagine, from your own private property, but not necessarily from public infrastructure. This man is getting well paid for his going against our rights. That's our national flag. And he believes he's a puppet for a higher minister, and so on and so on. On Thursday, we are heading over to Arranmore Island to take part in a 16-kilometre scenic walk. It's the Scenic Loop, and it's part of the ongoing Donegal Camino. The Donegal Camino is an annual event. It's been running for 5 years now, and it raises money for Cancer Care West Donegal. So it keeps the offices open there on the Pierce Road next to Sister Sarah's. It keeps them open. It keeps the services there. It keeps the facilities there. It helps to do that greatly. And it's a fantastic charity event, and we're delighted to be a part of it again this year. So me and Shannon are heading over, and we're going to take part in this loop. And we're going to be chatting to people on the walk, some interesting stories. We're going to be chatting to some students that are over there. And who's to say who else we might line up? I'll be coming in on Lee Gucci's show, and then on the 9 till noon show. I can't speak because my mouth is so dry, Shannon. Then coming in on the 9 till noon show as well. And we'd love you to donate. We have a personal iDonate here if you can. iDonate.ie/fundraiser/GregHughes1. If you can donate anything at all, it would be greatly appreciated. If you want to give us a call here at the radio station, if you have a fiver or a tenner or more, in fact, give us a call now whilst this show's on air, 07491 25000, and we can take your donation over the phone as well. All of the money goes to Cancer Care West Donegal. My involvement is as much to sort of back the guys that are doing it, bring a bit of publicity to it. And if I can take a grand or so over to Arranmore Island with me on behalf of the 9 till noon show family, all the better. Right. Let's get to the presidential election. Sean Defoe, political correspondent, joins me on the line now. Sean, good morning.
Good morning.
Right. I mean, we're starting to get some stuff we can get our teeth into now, really, aren't we? Let's focus on Fianna Fáil. Micheál Martin's come out and backed Jim Gavin, the local minister here, junior minister. Charlie McConnell last night also threw his weight behind Jim Gavin. But we also have very popular within the party MEP, Billy Kelleher. He wants to sort of be in the running to be Fianna Fáil's candidate. What is the story with that race, and how likely is it that it will be a contest?
I think it will be a contest. I think the low bar that they've set to get on the ballot of just needing the backing of 5 members of the parliamentary party out of 71 means it's pretty likely it is going to be a ballot. Jim Gavin already has way more than that declared. Billy Kelleher already has 4, so he's pretty likely to get on there. And then I thought the watch to see, does anyone else, does a Bertie Ahern or somebody manage to get worm their way in? You would have to say, obviously, Jim Gavin looks now to be party headquarters' favourite and their deemed candidate. Micheál Martin has been speaking to him over the summer as at Jack Chambers, and he now has the backing of all the cabinet ministers, as you mentioned, Charlie McConnell and some other junior ministers now coming out as well. Billy Kelleher starts from behind on this one. He does have some support in the parliamentary party, and they think that they can make this a contest because the vast majority are still undeclared and haven't tipped their hand one way or another. So it's going to be a pretty furious week of campaigning for the two of them behind the scenes. It'll be this day next week, around this time actually, that they'll be going into the parliamentary party meeting and starting to vote on who will be the presidential candidate. You'd have to say at the moment it looks advantage Jim Gavin, but never rule a Cork man out.
No, certainly not. And speaking to grassroots Fianna Fáilers, they're keeping their powder dry. And many I've spoken to, nodding towards Billy Kelleher. Is there a danger that this has been mishandled by Fianna Fáil and it could get really quite awkward? Obviously, Micheál Martin's nailed his colours to the mast. He's got some big names behind him, but it's not they necessarily that will make the decision. You know, this could end up being framed, if it's close, as some sort of a referendum, an internal referendum on the leadership of the party. Did he jump the gun, in your view, in, as I say, coming out so strongly in favour of Mr. Gavin so quickly?
I don't think he jumped the gun because that was his priority. And Micheál Martin always, all through the summer, we knew he didn't particularly fancy any of the options that were there from within Fianna Fáil. You can make a commentary, of course, on what he thinks of the state of Fianna Fáil on that. But I think that largely looks to the situation where, look, the last time Fianna Fáil contested the presidency, they were riding high at more than 40% in the polls. It was back in 97. Bertie Ahern's government was in place. It was a very, very different time to what Fianna Fáil is now. And so if you're going to win a national election like a presidency, you need to have more broad appeal. And that's what he's been looking for throughout the summer. And he did eventually land on Jim Gavin. Now, there are people, and I'm sure you've spoken to them as well, who are happy it's not a Fianna Fáil or not a dyed-in-the-wool Fianna Fáil. We don't know what Jim Gavin's political views on any subject are. He wasn't exactly particularly verbose with the media during his time as Dublin manager. And so we will have to see over the next little while as he campaigns to individual TDs in particular, what his viewpoints are, what his view of the world is, why would he be a good candidate for them. Billy Kelleher is much more of a known quantity. He's been a TD, he's been a junior minister, he's been an MEP. They know what they're getting. He is dyed in the wool of Fianna Fáil, and we know, and this is the argument that his supporters are making, where he has stood on different referendums over the last number of years, where he's campaigned on Fianna Fáil values, if you like. So there is a bit of a debate internally. Do they go the celebrity route of the more known character of the GAA guy and, you know, back up his experience as a member of the Defence Forces, as a chair of the Dublin City Task Force and all the various things he's done in civil life and try to make him a politician? Or do they go a bit more insular, not meaning that is a bad thing, but, you know, go for the internal party candidate, the Fianna Fáiler, who they know for a long time, and even though he doesn't have as big a name nationally, think that he could win it?
What is Sinn Féin going to do? We had Piers Doherty on the show last week, and he came across as cool on the notion of the party backing Catherine Connolly, and he said in earnest, he says, we literally haven't decided yet. And the next day then there was speculation that he could be the party's candidate. Now, locally, Sinn Féin is saying there's absolutely nothing to it and that he's got his eye on maybe, you know, the finance portfolio down the line. But listen, a week's a long time in politics, a day's a long time in politics. What is the sense that what Sinn Féin are going to have to decide sooner rather than later what their plan of action is? What do you think it might be?
They are. Look, it's very difficult to predict, and they are being tight-lipped because a lot of them don't know. You know, it seems to be a process where they have taken soundings from all parts of the party, but a decision hasn't been made yet. And I think there's three scenarios. One is backing Catherine Connolly, and I do get the sense that's a bit less likely than it was at the start of the summer. There's been a few missteps by her campaign so far, but also I think that there's a feeling that Sinn Féin wants to field a candidate of his own, especially now that we know that Fianna Fáil will definitely have a candidate in the field and Fine Gael will. The other option is to run somebody who probably doesn't have a fantastic chance of winning it. I mean, Chris Doherty maybe would have a good chance, but I mean like a Rose Conway-Walsh, an Angus O'Snoddy, who would represent the party well, but is going to be very much a rank outsider in the election. And then the one that's the most interesting outcome in all of this would be Mary Lou McDonald contesting the election. It's interesting. If you said to me before the summer, would she run? I would have said absolutely not. Then she sort of reversed her position and said she was open to it. There are parts of the party that are advocating for it that think she could definitely win the election. And I think if she did go in, she'd have a very, very good chance of it. There is the flip side of if you lose, having been party leader, having said for years that you want to be Taoiseach, you're in a much reduced state in the Dáil, and perhaps your leadership is fatally undermined. So it is a very big risk to carry on. The thing that just as the summer goes on makes me think she's giving it very serious consideration is that if they do run a quote-unquote lesser candidate, they're always now going to be viewed of as a bit of a disappointment because it's not Mary Lou. And so would you not, if she wasn't giving it serious consideration, have ruled herself out early, more considerably earlier this summer? So that is the most interesting option by far. In truth, I don't know what they're going to do, and I think a lot of Sinn Féin members don't know what they're going to do yet.
Fine Gael sitting pretty, are they? They've got their candidate pretty much out there now. It was early enough, not a ton of heat either. They're probably sitting back enjoying the speculation over Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin and others.
Well, the only thing is they're not being talked about a whole pile, which you can view as good or bad in August. But as you go into September and October, it becomes less good when we have a pretty short campaign. Given that they had to entirely ditch all of their plans 4 weeks ago, I think it's actually, or less than 4 weeks ago, it was 3 weeks ago, the Mairead McGuinness pulled out. I think they're not in a bad position. They have a ready-made replacement in Heather Humphreys. Okay, they're not having a contest. Their nominations close in about 40 minutes and Sean Kelly is pulled out of the race. Look, very experienced. Heather Humphreys, a long time around the cabinet table. Very likeable character when you see her at events, you know, the likes of the Ploughing Championships and these other events that will be happening over the next while. A good campaigner, person to person. Less strong when it comes to the likes of debates and media interviews, which is, of course, a very big part of this campaign as well. So she's a very, very live contender, possibly Fine Gael's best contender for the presidency since, I mean, where would you go back? Maybe 20, 30 years, perhaps ever. So they will have a very big hopes behind her. I think in the field, that is out there at the moment, it's just shaping up to be a fascinating race, because if you call it between, you know, Jim Gavin, Mary Lou McDonald, Heather Humphreys, Catherine Connolly, that's a very, very hard race to call, and the one that the campaign could have a very serious impact on one way or the other.
But what it's missing is a Bob Geldof, a Michael Flatley. Maybe they won't like being sort of named in the same sentence there. Let's start with Bob Geldof. Michael Flatley, I think that would be, I don't mean this Barrett bad, I think it'd be hilarious. But Bob Geldof, how serious do you think, he's not ruling himself out, how serious are his chances of a nomination? And is he the curveball if he were in there? He's a Marmite character.
He is. He'd certainly be instantly the most interesting character in the race, wouldn't he? So Micheál Martin had a chat with him last Friday, ultimately said to him, look, I'm back in Jim Gavin, thanks for your interest. That was on the back of Geldof's team reaching out to the Taoiseach to sort of suss out where he was. He said he would be interested. He wouldn't necessarily rule it out. He's also said he's got touring commitments, so he's obviously not dropping the entire schedule to suddenly run for president. I think if he did go down the council route, he would probably get a nomination. Yeah. Whether he's actually interested or this is another one of these people who loves to hear their name put out in the conversation and is very flattered by it, I think the latter is probably more likely.
And finally, maybe I was a little bit unkind to Michael Flatley, though I don't think he'll lose any sleep over it. Are his intentions serious?
It's very hard to tell. Again, I don't really, until any of these celebrities actually go and put some of the hard graft in, or I hear about them putting the hard graft in, I don't take them hugely seriously. I don't think he's going to be on the ballot.
No.
He could well go down the council route and get a nomination. And again, that would be interesting, not only for the celebrity factor, but also because he's a very good friend with Donald Trump. He's been at a lot of the events that he's been at. He was at the White House for the St. Patrick's Day last year, has performed at a number of Trump rallies. So it would be sort of fascinating. But does he want all of the smoke of going through an election campaign and having his, you know, legacy, instead of being, you know, Lord of the Dance, have all of his political views be put under the spotlights of the TV cameras and the microscope of a presidential campaign? I think ultimately for a lot of these people who are being mentioned, when it comes down to that reality and when you actually take soundings and advice on how brutal a presidential campaign is, that might be enough to soften the cough.
Peter Casey is an interesting case. He did really quite well. I think we were at a point in politics that we're far more beyond now, and the, sort of his angles, his lines did resonate with a certain group of the population, 23% of the vote. He might struggle just with the way things moved on politically, I think, where his views arguably, actually, you could say, are slightly more mainstream, believe it or not, but that could be open for debate. Would he get the support required? Hardly.
Hard to see at this time. He got it last time, so never rule it out. He did get 1 in 4, or almost 1 in 4 votes last time around. And like you say, he sort of tapped into something at the time of the sentiment, a protest vote, if you like, against Michael D. Higgins. I mean, the result wasn't ever particularly close, but he did get a very significant vote. The problem with the council route this time, and if we were taking it as given that all the parties are spoken for, which they very nearly are, is that in previous elections, and in 2018, for example, most of the major parties didn't field a candidate. So their councillors were more free to do whatever they liked. If Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin all have a candidate in the race, they are going to whip their councillors. Now, there's always the chance of councillors just defying the party. The stakes aren't particularly high for them if they do. And it is the one chance they have really to influence national politics every 7 years when they can nominate someone for the presidency. History would tell you someone is going to come through that route, because at least two candidates have done it in every election since 1997 when Dana started the trend. So there is a chance of him coming through. I think it is certainly less likely in 2018. And I think if he did run this time around, it would be like what happened to Sean Gallagher last time, where he got a very big vote in 2011 and came very close. And in 2018, he was brought right back down to earth and his vote absolutely collapsed. So Casey has gone very quiet in the last few weeks, despite saying before that he definitely would be going the council route. If he did, not 100% sure he'd get a nomination. And if he did, he certainly wouldn't be winning the thing.
And very finally, you mentioned friends of Donald Trump, Conor McGregor. It's incredibly unlikely he could presumably garner enough support to get on the ballot paper.
Not a chance, no. He's claiming online that he has it, that he has support in the bag, without saying where that's coming from. He said councils, TDs, senators. I can tell you from speaking to council members and TDs and senators, he absolutely doesn't.
And I can tell you from not speaking to them, he doesn't.
Yeah, so it doesn't take a mystic, does it, to realise he's not going to be on the ballot. Okay. But he will do something during the campaign. He will be some sort of disruptor. I can see the post already where he says, oh yeah, I had the support and then the party screwed me out of it because that's political.
Turn outside the TV studios when the debates are ongoing or whatever it might be. I know exactly
something
how.
Something like that. Totally fictitious, exactly. Made up stuff. But he won't be on the ballot paper, thankfully.
All right, Sean, listen, thanks so much for your analysis. Greatly appreciated. Take care. That's political correspondent Sean Defoe chatting to us there. What's your views? 08660 25000. Kevin O'Sullivan joins me on the programme now, and we're back to the issue of the 95-year-old oak tree down in Ballyrain in Letterkenny. There was a lot of conversation about it when it was under threat. That threat never lifted, but the conversation in the public arena waned somewhat. Its future may well be determined very soon. Kevin, thank you for joining me.
Okay, Greg, no problem.
Right, you're of the... go ahead, Kevin, please.
I should say that my wife is more concerned about the tree, and she's bolted me onto this business. But my perspective is much more general one about the whole concept of how the roads in Letterkenny are being developed and so forth. And the tree is obviously an aspect of that. would you like me to just...
Yes, of course. Go on, outline your concerns. Yeah, yes, of course.
Okay, well, I mean, this whole scheme is being brought about by the council and a majority of councillors who are actually from outside Letterkenny, which is an issue in itself. But I just wanted to put it into context. If you look at Letterkenny's main street, which in any other town in Ireland, the main street is really the most important street. And Letterkenny, it's been redesigned so many times and it's ended up as a single lane and very dangerous. And I always put to people the consequences of the Liverpool crash a few weeks ago when the Liverpool celebrations were going on and somebody drove into people on the pavement. Now, within seconds, ambulances, police cars, fire engines could get to that scene, and fortunately, nobody was too seriously injured. But if that happened on the main street in Letterkenny, no emergency vehicles would have got through because it's a solid line and you can't overtake. So, I mean, that's an example of the bad planning that goes ahead. And then you take the Port Road to the Dry Arch, from the Dry Arch to the Polestar, rather. I mean, millions were spent on design work for that, and yet they didn't allow for the swilly possibly flooding. Mm. So they had to dig up that new bit of the road and put a bypass, which ironically meant that section of the cycle lane disappeared.
Mm. Kevin, ironically, again, though, we are planning for the future, it would seem. So when Letterkenny is bypassed and an awful lot of traffic, one would hope, is taken out of Letterkenny, hopefully significant shopping traffic remains and local traffic, we're planning for the future to improve traffic flow, to make it more safe for pedestrians, for cyclists. Is that not the type of planning that we're seeing now that you are claiming was absent in the past?
No, because the only way to improve through traffic through the town and to help cyclists is to have the Bonaghy bypass. That's happening at the moment is a development from people who've made a mess of the existing town. Going back to the four-lane highway, you have a situation where two large vehicles can barely pass each other, mm-hmm. where ambulances and Garda cars can't get down because it's generally blocked. There's an enormous length of cycle lane on each side of that new road, and you don't see a cyclist on them. I think also the problem is that what they're trying to do with this scheme, and we haven't really discussed the scheme in detail, is that they're trying to solve bottlenecks that exist now. And the way they're doing it is extending the necks of the bottles, which is actually going to make it worse.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think people realise that you've got the various traffic lights at the Polestar there's going to be, instead of the Ballyrain roundabout, there are going to be traffic lights there. Opposite the Ballyrain Health Centre, there are going to be traffic lights there. And at Tommy Key's garage, there are going to be traffic lights there.
Yeah, but if you're sitting on the Remelton Road and you can't move and you're sat there for an hour, at least with traffic lights, you know you will be able to, I mean, listen, right when they were developing, say, the Polestar traffic light system, the council were up front. It says this doesn't mean that necessarily your journey is going to get any quicker. It just means that everyone will be able to get to where they want to go. Is that not the reality, that we do need, you know, stop-go systems to ensure all routes have at least a chance to get where they want to go to?
No, what the scheme is going to do is sort of equalise the delays. So everybody, the traffic won't go any faster because they're narrowing, say, at the Mount Errigal, they're taking away an extra lane there. How that can conceivably improve the throughput is beyond me, especially if people are, say, driving into the Mount Errigal. They're going to hold up all the traffic, whereas before they could coast into a right-hand lane and not delay too much of the traffic.
So you're...
But anyway, I mean, that's my general rant about...
No, I appreciate
being...
So
people who are now going to foist this new scheme on us.
You're less sympathetic about the tree than your wife might be, though. It's actually...
I'm naturally sympathetic about the tree, but I think there's, you know, if you look at the scheme, it's a European green policy that's affecting it, because this active travel is a green scheme. And it's just the height of hypocrisy that a green scheme has already involved taking down 10 mature trees along the linear park and now taking out this 100-year-old oak tree, which, if you're coming from Remelton or Kilmacrenan or any of those areas, is the first decent view you get of Letterkenny.
Well, the council say they're going to harvest the acorns from the tree, plant a few of those acorns, and offer acorns to local residents if they wish to plant the tree, plant them themselves. But anyway, the tree
will be... Well, I look forward to seeing the new trees in 100 years' time.
Yeah, well, I won't be around to see that. I won't even get to... They will still be tied to a stick by the time my time's come to an end.
Nah,
right, okay. There's a lot of... the one thing is there's also been a lot of political resistance. Ironically, people in Letterkenny, the councillors, many of them sort of don't really think that this is the right thing for the town at this time. As you quite rightly pointed out, councillors in Mallin and some councillors I questioned and weren't really au fait with the plans at all, but just voted along the lines of their colleagues in the council. It is kind of a tough pill to swallow for the people of Letterkenny to have their movements dictated by people who will never encounter the problems or rarely will encounter the problems these changes may create.
Yeah, I mean, it's not so much that sort of issue. It's the fact that they don't want to listen to the local people. I mean, we've had a number of meetings, and including one culminating with a number of councillors, at which the roads people actually presented their plans. And quite frankly, the councillors sat there like tailor's dummies. They didn't say anything. It was left to the local people to actually speak up. The only councillor who did recognise what we were saying was Kieran Brogan, and the rest of them are absolutely helpless.
Okay.
And these are people who...
All right, OK. Listen, that's your view, Kevin, and I fully respect it. Kevin O'Sullivan there, 086 60 25,000. A caller says, when this campaign was first underway, was there not a tree surgeon called? And he said the tree was rotten inside anyway. It would only be a matter of time before the tree rots, even if we are to save it. It looks all right to me. I'm not a tree surgeon, but the tree looks fine to me. Do I have a massive emotional connection with the retention of this tree or a tree? Honestly, if it's for the wider good, maybe I shouldn't say that. But anyway, listen, I am not a local, so it's not up to me. Please encourage all councillors to go and meet the commuters at public meetings at the Hideout tomorrow evening and listen to our concerns. That we talked about that yesterday. The oak trees cannot be grown in town gardens. No, and it would be foolish, actually, to be honest with you, I think, to be randomly handing acorns out to people to plant them around the area, because you're just really planting a problem for future generations, such as the root network and the size of these trees. It's only going to cause problem. I can't see how you could realistically grow an oak tree within Letterkenny town boundaries without it pinging someone off. guests. I'm joined on the programme now by 100% Redress Party Councillor Ali Farron. Good morning to you, Ali. How are you keeping?
Going good.
It's good to have you with us. Right, so you are talking about life in rural Ireland. Tell us the points you've been making.
Well, most people know I live in Malin Head, one of the most rural parts of the country. And there's certainly an element that you feel that we're being, you know, we're worried about the deterioration of our communities and the lack of services coming in, and the ones we have, we want to hold on to. So that would be my main consideration at the moment. The reason you probably have me on here today is because I made a video last night in relation to Corncrake Life being discontinued in this neck of the woods. And while I'm not the greatest, or haven't been the greatest lover of the Corncrake, I always felt it was something that was a noose around our neck. It was very restrictive. But it was, it's a tattoo on a map that we cannot erase. It's designated a large part of Malin Head as an area, a special area of conservation for corncrakes. Now, this was done by Europe, and it's been funded by the National Parks and Wildlife and actually the Department of Housing and whatever other part is on that. So they're the people that's engaging with local farmers to encourage, or they were working with local farmers to encourage to create better habitat that corncrakes could come and live in it, and one thing or another. And we were finding in the last few years, local people cannot get building in this area. We cannot get, you know, extensions to, or get new houses built. And as an effect of that means our school numbers are dropping. You know, it's going to have a massive effect. There's people from this area moving out of this area. But what was taught to me, or I learned at one of the meetings that we had with the National Parks and Wildlife, is that there's a possibility of getting planning legislation less restrictive if we can get our corncrake numbers up in the area. Now, we need, I think, 6 breeding pairs in the certain area of Malin Head. And nationally, I believe corncrake numbers are up, but in Malin Head, they're not there yet. And we're learning now at the end of this year, the funding that goes into National Parks and Wildlife, or goes into the Corncrake Life, is being discontinued. So farmers who have been encouraged this last few years to farm in a way that was very more, you know, that would be more encouraging for corncrake to survive or to come and breed, are the carpet of funding has been pulled out from underneath their feet, and basically the corncrake's on its own, which means that there's going to be no encouragement or no system in place to encourage corncrakes to come to this area so that we can get building.
Ironic, isn't it? I never thought I'd find a situation where we'd be talking about encouraging endangered species to support farmers and to encourage development. It wasn't on my bingo card for 2025, especially from you, Ellie. And I don't mean that.
Well, certainly, it wasn't on mine either. Mm. Let's be fair. But, you know, when you learn more about things, like the way the National Parks and Wildlife see it, if we can get the breeding pairs in that area up, then it shows that it's working. So to lose half an acre for a site wouldn't be as big a deal as if at the moment they're not there. So it's a major issue for this community. And the government have known about it for long enough that they put the plan in place in the first place. Now they're pulling the carpet from under their feet and leaving people. Now, there is other schemes coming in place, but as far as I can gather, they're not specialists. They're not, you know, that niche type of farming that's needed to promote that type of bird. Now, so you're either serious about conserving them or you're not. And that'll be my...
Yeah, interesting. So, I mean, have you made contact with National Parks and Wildlife Services yet? Have you had any feedback from them?
Yeah, well, we wrote to them. I wrote to them, and so did Charles Ward. And, you know, but in this, I work in a community centre, as you know, and we have meetings on a regular basis, and I have plenty of dealings with some of the staff from National Parks and Wildlife. And last night, actually, there was a team of them here, and a team of farmers here. So, yeah, we be in contact with them, and that, you know, while people who are working for National Parks and Wildlife, they're doing their best, but if you're being taken off a scheme that you've been designing for the last 5 years and you're told, well, go you and sit in that office and do another scheme for whatever else, you know, like, you're either serious about conserving a bird or you're not.
Yeah. I get you. Okay, well, we'll follow on, actually, chase up National Parks and Wildlife Services ourselves. But for now, Councillor Ali Farron, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much,
Take care. All right, really do appreciate it. 08660 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number if you've got a view in relation to that. Right. Greg, all the usual suspects giving off about road improvements. They're only happy when they have something to complain about. Always the people without any experience or qualification in road design have the most to say. But we are the road users as well, and I think every individual has a right to their point of view. And lots of people have views about traffic in Letterkenny. Do they have all the information that would help them truly to formulate an actual solution that the road designers have at their disposal? Probably not, but still, we do appreciate all comments. Hi, Greg. The amount of people has stopped going into Letterkenny because of the traffic is unreal. It's a complete disaster, which is not good for anyone. Donegal needs a incredibly busy, vibrant, active Letterkenny. And that feeds out around the entire county, and that is because it is the largest population. It's a huge employer, and trust me, Donegal's success relies to a great extent, not exclusively, on Letterkenny's success. A caller says, I live beside the Clanry and the Polestar development, and traffic lights has been the best thing ever to happen for us. I no longer have to take back roads now. See, that's it. You see, you like, there was a time coming to work where I would hit the four lanes, the two lanes going into Letterkenny, and you'd stop at the Clannery and you'd go, you know, am I ever going to get to work? Yes, there is a delay now, obviously, at busy times, but you know the lights will change to your advantage, that eventually we'll get through the roundabout, and over time you sort of get an average time. People coming in the Remelton Road may end up with that level of sort of security that they will eventually get to their destination. I don't know what the right thing is. I can comment freely because I'm not from Letterkenny, but maybe it's, do we suck it and see? I don't know. In terms of the presidential election, Bob is the man for the job, says a listener. Hi, Greg. We'll be on Arranmore Island on Thursday doing a classic car tour. 26 cars. Keep your eyes peeled. Gary Devine. Of course, Gary. Great stuff. All right. Well done. It's going to be a busy Thursday then, so isn't it? Very exciting. No member of a political party, especially the leader, should be allowed to state publicly that they support a particular person for a so-called non-political position. They are, of course, entitled to support their preferred candidate, but this public announcement is intended to influence the voter. How is this any different from discussing publicly an ongoing court case? Well, because it's not a court case. It is a matter for public discourse and conversation. And I could argue to you that Jim Gavin, who is not necessarily, you know, you don't cut him, you don't necessarily know if you cut him, does he bleed fee in the fall? You could also argue that if you're not a Micheál Martin fan, an endorsement from Micheál Martin to Jim Gavin could put you off voting for Jim Gavin. So it's a double-edged sword, but we can't tease that out or have that convo unless that information's out. So I have no problem with that. And listen, you might say it's not a political role, but Michael D. Higgins has used it when it suits him to put political pressure on and to express his own personal political views. So it is a political role, whether we want to believe it or not. He's Labour, and a lot of what he says sort of aligns with that sort of ethos. A caller says, is it not more concerning that 20 out of 71 members of Fianna Fáil have declared that there's no one in Fianna Fáil capable of contesting the presidential election? Well, they've got Kelleher to get behind now. Another is, Jim Gavin even a member of Fianna Fáil? It's ridiculous that an outsider is more capable than anyone in their own house. I would feel a bit like that if I was a member or supporter of a particular political party. I would say to myself, well, do we not have someone? Thankfully, I'm not, and I don't have to worry about that. Do some quick Googling, Greg. Roblox is in a lot of bother right now. Several US states are suing them. The company sent a cease and desist to a predator hunter. Watch the chat control consent you're trying to manufacture here when approaching this online safety topic. Parents need to start taking control of their kids' browsing habits and stop ignoring their children. Listen, I've been saying this for years. I don't need to Google on it. What's going on in online chat spaces is crazy. And we know there are predatory people out there. That is literally what I said. It's not just Roblox that's getting sued. ChatGPT is getting sued for damaging children. Twitter is suing back. X is suing back for extra measures being put in place to protect children. You know, Meta themselves are resisting European measures to protect children, and there's court cases ongoing. So I'm very familiar with Roblox. I never allowed my children on it. At least, you know, with the likes of the PlayStation, certainly there's content filtering, but you have to keep an eye on what your children are doing, because you wouldn't allow them to run around on their own in a massive city chatting to every stranger of all shapes and sizes. Yet in certain online spaces, that's exactly what's happening. In relation to RTE pay, they should be paid the same as every other human per week. It's a complete joke, but only in Ireland. And yeah, it is kind of only in Ireland. I would vote for Bob Geldof for sure. I think the Bob Geldof presidential candidacy has the potential to be interesting if he were to go for it. Do all these people who talk about the right to fly the flag actually show it the respect it's due as our national flag? As per protocol, the flag should only be flown from sunrise to sunset unless it's illuminated at night. Do they ensure that it is in a respectful condition? That is to say, it should not be flown when tattered, dirty or faded. The amount of flags I've seen flown have shown very little respect. I agree. I understand. I think all flags should be treated with a certain respect, definitely. But in relation to our national flag, that's somewhat enshrined. Good luck to these enforcers encouraging people to resist from using preloaded fire sticks. With the prices Sky charge for premium service, it is. Why do they charge so much for their services? So Liverpool can spend $500 million in the transfer window? You know, that has to be funded somehow. But anyway, this so-called clampdown is only spreading the word that a cheaper option is available. A consumer cannot be caught unless the guardie enter the room when a subscription program is actually being watched. Chances of that happening are negligible. Possession of a preloaded fire stick is not illegal, so nothing to worry about. And I think there's actually a little bit of grey area in the law in that regard too. Downloading versus streaming, whereas downloading onto a hard drive certainly I think is legal. Streaming, I think it's a little bit of a grey area. Not really quite sure, but there you go. Of course, people are going to still keep going for that option. The only way that stops is if they are able to block the sources. You remember the dream boxes? They found a way around the dream boxes. The only way you'll stop illegal streaming is if you find a way to cut the stream off at source, if the truth be told. All right. Listen, thank you so much for listening to the show, watching the show, engaging with it. We really do appreciate it. But that's it for this Tuesday. We're back tomorrow morning at 9.